So, Brad, I'm a single man for the next 8 weeks as my wife is working in a different part of California. She's in production on her next television show. And so we have largely lucked out across the 20 year of her career in that she has not had to travel to Canada. Well, she did have to go for iZombie, but she had to go to Canada. Most people have to go to Canada, or they go to Atlanta, or places where people have subsidized the film industry. And so Hollywood will up stakes and go to an entirely different state, like New Mexico gets a lot as well. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, we have lucked out. All of Gloria's shows have filmed in Los Angeles. How I Met Your Mother, One Day at a Time, all this stuff. So she could literally drive across town, which was perfect. So this is the first time that she is out of town for a huge chunk of time. I think we have another 7 or 8 weeks to go. And Brad, I am falling apart, Brad. I am falling apart. Here is number one concern for Dave Kellett without his wife. I can't sleep without my wife here. It's 3 a.m. and really? I'm staring at the ceiling. I can't sleep.
You can't sleep at all? You you just can't settle down?
It's not a matter of settling down. I'm not 4 years old. I miss her. I can't. My comfort level is such, like, have you ever, here's the best example I could give. Have you ever gone to a hotel room where you're exhausted? You've had a big day at a Comic-Con, for example. You're exhausted. Yeah. You go back to the hotel room, but none of the conditions are right in that hotel room for you to sleep. The bed's not your bed. The pillow is not your pillow. These sheets are weird. The curtains don't really block the light, right? Nothing is right emotionally to fall asleep. Yeah. It takes another hour or two to fall asleep, right? That's what it's like when my wife is gone. The conditions aren't right. I can't fall asleep. I'm like, oh, something's wrong in the world. I can't do it.
Well, I got to be honest with you. When you first mentioned that in private, I told Carolyn, and just she started laughing. And she goes, you don't have that problem, do you? And I said, no. I'm like, no. When I go to a hotel, I'm like, I sprawl out over the bed. You know, I sleep the sleep of angels. I don't know what it is, but she goes, you don't have that problem at all. I said, listen, I still love you. I just sleep really well.
So point of clarification. I know I brought up hotels as my example, but that was actually a bad example for me, because when I am at a hotel for a Comic-Con, I actually, like you, I sleep the sleep of kings. I'm like, I'm out. I'm ready to go. Usually also because hotels have those blackout curtains that are amazing, and so that puts me right out. But when I am home alone without my wife, so all the normal conditions are there except she is missing, every time I cannot fall asleep until 3 or 4 a.m. It's such like a kid with its bear. I can't fall asleep without my bear. You know what I mean? I don't know
I hope Gloria skips this podcast. that was a terrible comparison.
I tell you, Brad, I'm not great at writing romance. I told you that from the outset.
Oh my gosh.
On that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about where Dave apparently makes terrible comparisons of his marriage and making comics.
And the show about, I'm trying to get a pulling your string joke in there, and I just don't have the heart. And the show about making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal, Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. Speaking of beds, by the way, I think the only time in our entire comics history that you and I had to share a bed was at New York Comic Con about 15 years ago. Remember, we couldn't get a hotel room, and the only room we could get, you and I had to share a queen or a king, I think. Remember that?
Yep. You found out just how little Carolyn was exaggerating when she says that I can snore loud enough to shake the windows inside their panes.
I think both of us woke up and looked at the other one in the morning time and went, good God, you snore. I remember both of us. Oh, no, wait. There is one more time where we had to share. Remember at Web Comics Week, New England Web Comics Weekend?
Yep, yep. It was the four of us.
Scott Kurtz, Chris Straub, Brad Geiger, Dave Kellett all had to share a room together. That was like a sleepover, though. We laughed until like 3 a.m. that night.
We laughed like giggly little kids in junior high school. It was, we were up until the wee hours of the morning, and there was these runners, these things that just weren't funny under any other circumstances, but we were laughing so hard. My stomach was starting to hurt.
Yeah. You get those punch drunk joke runners that are only funny at 2 a.m. Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, I should launch this into the show, Brad, by mentioning that we are super happy to welcome back as our sponsor for this week, the good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com and the makers of the Wacom One, which both Brad and I have in our studio. And in fact, Brad, I should mention that right now the Wacom One is saving my bacon because
really?
We do not have a permanent Wacom in the studio for Beth, and she's coming back into the office today, by the way. Today is her first day back in the office. So we are having her for the next week or two until the new Wacom comes, transporting back and forth her Wacom One from home, bringing it in to work. But that just shows how mobile it is. The thing weighs next to nothing. It's like bringing a very lightweight notebook. The wires are nothing to speak of. It's super easy and has been super functional, fully functional Wacom for her for the last 15 months of the pandemic. It's been great.
Absolutely. And like I said before, it always delivers those top level professional results. You don't feel like you're working on like an ancillary unit. When I'm working on my Wacom One at home, I'm just as comfortable as when I'm working on my Pro Level Cintiq over here. It's clearly a little bit smaller screen, but the results you get, the feel that you get, the responsiveness, you never miss a beat working on your Wacom One.
Absolutely. And it's been so nice to see over the years with this show how many people have jumped into digital with the Wacom One based on our recommendation, which has been super heartwarming to see. So we are incredibly happy to welcome back the folks at Wacom at WACOM.com at Wacom.com. And Bradley J. Geiger, I got the first topic for you today.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes down to this, Brad. Here is the topic for today.
Yeah.
Is much like a grandmother, Brad, you are my pride and joy, and I wanted you to talk about you being your pride and joy. Are you ready to take folks through the worlds of pride and joy?
This was a topic that came up just recently. I was doing a live TikTok event, and somebody came on and said, I'm terrible at marketing on social media because I always feel like I'm bragging. And let's face it, so many of us were brought up not to brag. You don't talk about yourself. You don't make a big deal about yourself. It's unseemly to talk about yourself. And this person was saying, I struggle with promoting myself for this reason. And I said, I've got two words for you. And I've been doing this for years, and it's the perfect solution. I've got two words, pride and joy. Whenever you're marketing, you can get out exactly the same marketing messages as a very cocky, a very overambitious marketing message if you use the words either pride or joy. Listen to this, for example. I'm gonna give you a couple marketing pitches. Here's one. This is an amazing comic, and you should read it because it's the best comic out there, right? Now that's cocky. That might even be a little bit abrasive. Let me tweak it just a little bit. I'm so proud of this comic. I'd be thrilled if you read it because I think it's the best one out there. That's got a completely different swing to it because now you're not saying this is the best ever. You're saying I'm really proud of this. And it's a lot harder for you to feel as if you're bragging, because it's okay to be proud of something. And it's a lot harder for somebody to shoot back at you, because who wants to tell you that you shouldn't be proud of something? It puts you above reproach.
Yeah, because then they have to actively be the jerk to make that shot at you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Brad, I think this is an amazing point because it also gets at the heart of what we can do differently as an artist that any corporation anywhere, even including the comics corporations, can't do, which is to make a personal, subjective, emotional appeal based on our own feelings about our art, which is not possible. If you think about like Ford or Starbucks or Xerox, or even think about DC or Marvel or Image, they can't say we're incredibly proud. They can say it, but it comes across as corporate speak, you know. But if Brad Geiger says it, or if Dave Kellett says, look, I'm really proud of the work that I did on Drive, and it has brought me a tremendous amount of joy, and it brings me such joy to see how much joy it brings in the readers. So I think it's something you should try, you know. That comes across as incredibly sincere.
Yeah, and that brings me to my second one. One is to make a pride statement. Number two is to make a joy statement. You can say, I had so much fun doing this, or I'm really thrilled with how this turned out. You talk about any number of different ways in which doing this creative effort made you happy. When you talk about your joy in the process, in the outcome, in any number of ways, it's the same exact thing. It kind of puts you above reproach, because now you're not saying, I'm so cool, look at me, you know, this is amazing, I need to be the center of attention. No, you're just saying, I'm happy in this moment, and I want to share my happiness with you. People, not only is it a lot more comfortable for in terms of a marketing message, it's more comfortable for artists to say pride or joy statements, but I think readers, I think followers, I think people on social media gravitate towards that, because like Dave just pointed out, it's more of a personal emotional outreach. So not only is it more comfortable for an artist, it's also more effective.
Yeah, it is. It's also, it gets to, remember the heart of last week when we were talking about apologizing, and we said, and I think one of the most effective ways you can apologize as an artist is, my goal as an artist is to bring joy into the world, is to bring entertainment and happiness and laughter. And I have failed on this front, and I'm sorry about that, right? That's an effective apology, because you kind of are sidestepping the thing that, even if you don't agree with, that you may have offended with, but you're also saying the heart of the matter, which is, I want with my art to bring joy into the world. So when you are making a marketing statement that says, Evil Inc. has brought me joy, and I know it has brought a lot of people joy. And so I, Brad Geiger, I'm trying to tell you, you really should dip a toe into this and experience a little bit of the joy of this comic. And that's such a different proposition than a value proposition that Ford would say, with like, we've got better bucket seats, and they are they're more efficiently made, and they offer better value for the dollar. That's a very different kind of salesman-y statement than, I'm really trying to bring joy into the world. I am proud of the joy that I'm bringing into the world. This is something that you should try.
Oh my gosh, you just brought up such a great topic, because you see web cartoonists particularly do this all the time. And as a matter of fact, I use TweetDeck, and I've got a whole bunch of like hashtags and keywords that I follow, just to keep an eye on things, just to keep a toe in the water. And I follow a lot of web comics and webtoons related keywords. And I see web cartoonists making this mistake all the time. Ready for this? What they're doing is they're kind of cargo culting what they see from corporations. Listen, read my comic. It's free. Free to read every day on my website. Check out No Shoes for Tuesday, the free webcomic. If your lead words to market your comic are that it's free, you're missing the point. Comics have been free on the internet for 20 years. In fact, it would be much more surprising if it wasn't for free, right? Yeah. It's actually more of a topic if it's exclusive content. That's a completely different story. That's a different marketing pitch. But in the same way Dave just said, we get to use these words. Corporations don't, because it wouldn't sound right. Put that on its ear and you'll see why we shouldn't try to use corporate speak in our marketing. You're going to tell somebody that your comic is free? You've missed the boat from a long time ago. Don't tell them that it's free. Tell them why they should read your comic. Tell them why it's good. Don't tell them why it's free.
The only proposition in which using the word free is a workable marketing technique is when the consumer already knows the value of the item in their own monetary levels. So, for example,
yeah.
Brett, if I say buy an iPhone right now and we will throw in free headphones along with it, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get free headphones. You as a consumer already know that Apple is going to charge you $40 normally for those headphones. So you're like, hot damn. But if I say, oh, Brad, a webcomic you've never heard of, right? And previously have had no interest to read is free.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, that's like saying your next gardening implement, if you're not a gardener, is free. You're like, I don't care. I'm not a gardener.
Yeah.
I don't want, why do I care if it's free? I have no interest in this thing. And so like that is a marketing proposition for a comic that someone is not familiar with is the opposite of effective because you're like, okay, great. Carburetors are free. I don't need a carburetor right now. So why are you telling me that this carburetor is free? You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So,
right. It's the lowest kind of marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. But to get back to Brad's point and capstone it along with him, I think that pride and joy are, and I'm going to use it heavily in my Kickstarter here for my new drive Kickstarter that's happening right now. See me working in? See what I did right there, Brad? See me working in one last time?
That's at newdrivebook.com?
Newdrivebook.com. And I got to tell you, but it's effective. I'm using it there a lot because it has the benefit of being true, right? And the sincerity comes through. And frankly, in a world where we're being spoken to and yelled at by corporations all the time, a little bit of individualistic, human-to-human communication where we're basically saying, hey, wouldn't you like to feel a little joy? I'm really proud of this work that I did. I hope you like it. I think you're going to like it. I'm really proud and happy with how it came out. I think it can make you happy and entertained for a while. That's a powerful statement from a, that's not bragging.
Yes.
That's a powerful human to human statement.
Absolutely. You know, Dave, I'm so glad you brought up Drive because just recently I know that you were talking about the history of your sci-fi comic Drive, and it's got kind of not only an interesting history, but a lot of embedded lessons that we can learn if for our own projects as we're starting them out. I know we get a lot of letters and emails from younger cartoonists who are just starting out, and that's such an awkward time. I wonder if you wouldn't kind of take us through the history of Drive, and so we can point some of those out to people.
Yeah, so the reason for that sort of Twitter diatribe that I went on the other day, not a diatribe, a sort of walk through history, was I just wrapped up the writing and the publishing online anyway of Act 3. I think we're about 500 pages or 600 pages into the story now. And it just wrapped. And I took that opportunity to do a little walk down memory lane, which you don't normally do. And it was about 15, 20 threaded tweets talking about how... the idea for Drive came to me in a moment of pretty severe ennui and boredom with Sheldon as a title.
Yeah.
I'd been doing it for about 10 years. And if you remember, Brad, Bloom County ended, I think, after 9 years. Calvin and Hobbes ended after 10 years. Far Side ended after 16 years. I know you felt this as well when you get to the 10-year point. I remember Scott Kurtz had the same feeling at the 10-year point. You get to a thing where you're like, I've done 7 comics a week in this world for 10 years. I'm a little bit bored with it. And so I wanted a project just for me, right? That was the sort of mindset going into this period of my life. And then I went to an artist signing at Meltdown Comics in Hollywood, which is a sort of famous comic book shop in Los Angeles. And I went there with Chris Straub, with Kazu Kibuishi, with Jorge Cham of PhD Comics, and with Steve Troop of Melonpool. And it was one of those signings, Brad, where absolutely no one came to the signing, like to the point of ridiculous embarrassment. Like no one came. We were there for like 2 hours.
Really?
We had promised Meltdown we'd be there. And it was 5 artists. No one came. I don't know what happened. There was some, maybe there was counter programming in LA that day. So we laughed and talked and sketched. And as we were all sketching, the idea for Drive came pretty fully formed into my head over those 2 hours, right? And so I sketched most of the main characters. Obviously, those got reworked in time. And I sketched the ship for the first time. And I distinctly remember Chris Straub leaning over and going, oh, hey, that ring on the back of the ship is a fun starship design. I was like, oh, cool. If I caught Chris's eye, then I know that'll work. So anyway, all this is being said, like it was off to the races for me. I was like, oh, finally, a project that can kind of be for me just for fun. I just want to tell the story. And so It's worth sharing with everybody that when I launched it, I did not have a website for it. I did not even have a title for it. I had no business plan for it. I just wanted to do it for me. It was just for fun. So I launched it as a Saturday sci-fi storyline. That's what I called it on Sheldon. And it only ran on Saturdays for about 6 or 9 months. And I said, hey, gang, this is now it's time for something completely different. This is just me sharing a story that I want to tell for me.
Yeah.
And a couple things that I learned out of it. One was, my God, it's a really effective way to write a story when you're writing it for you and you're giving yourself permission to write it for you. And there were so many things about Drive when it started. And I remember telling you at the time, two or three different artists emailed me, one of whom said, hey, Dave, this is really cool that you're starting this project. You're not the right art style to draw Drive. I do you remember me calling you about this? Because this put me in a hot boil rage.
I remember that phone call.
I so rarely am angry. And that one, I was like, I am genuinely angry that another artist would call me and say that I'm not the right style to draw this. So that happened. And then another thing happened, because again, I was writing it just for me, that I included a lot of found objects in the story. So you'd have the story, clip it along. And then all of a sudden there was a torn out page from the book from that era in the story, or there was an encyclopedia entry or an intercorporate memo that would appear. And it was very much like how the Victorians would do that in a novel, that you would suddenly have a letter in the middle of a novel, right? I loved it. It made me happy. There was a percentage of other artists and readers that are like, what are you doing? Why are you having these letters and memos and torn out pages and found objects? This is not how a comic is done. I don't enjoy this. And what was great is because I'd given myself permission to write it for me, to me, you know, so that I could enjoy it, I was like, tuning it out, not even listening to it, this early criticism, I don't even care. I'm enjoying the process. And so without a title, without a website, and frankly, ignoring a lot of the people that were saying like, hey, this should be in color. This should be drawn in a different style. This should not include found objects. I was off to the races, and it found its audience, I think, in large part because I wrote it for me.
Oh my gosh, what a great... So like I said, I was following along on Twitter, and that's the first thing I thought of, is that there are so many lessons to people who want to start their own comics, whether they want to do short form, long form, whatever. There are so many lessons embedded in that story. And the first one that I really wanted to underline is that you wrote it for you. You didn't take a look and say, well, listen, there's a favorable demographic here between, people from 18 to 35. You didn't try to shoot for a demographic. You didn't do something because you thought it was going to be popular. You did something because it fed a creative need inside your heart, and that's what you wanted to do. And you had the attitude from the very beginning, well, if this doesn't go over, not a big deal. I'll do something else creative next, right? If Drive would have never really caught on, you would have said, that felt good to get off my chest. I'm glad I shared that with you. Yeah. And you might have been a little bit disappointed that other people didn't grab onto it as much as you did, but it wouldn't have stopped you from creating. You would have gone on to the next thing and the next thing. And I knowing you as I do, your approach wouldn't have changed. The next thing would have been something that you did because it was your own personal creativity and not necessarily an exercise in marketing and demographics. That's the first thing that I wanted to point out. And the other thing is that it's interesting for you to share that you had an awful lot of people telling you, nah, you're doing this all wrong. Like maybe even some of those people, had some really good credentials behind them. And sometimes you've got to, even as much as we give advice on this show week after week, and I will be honest with you, when I see people kind of brush off our advice and say, I'm going to do it my own way, I always kind of, it always kind of irks me. But at the same time, I'm okay with that because they've got to live with their own decisions, right? That decision's not going to affect me, right? You've got to live with that, your decision. And so it should be your decision. It should be something that you feel strongly about. Even if somebody with pretty good credentials comes up and says, you're doing this all wrong, it's okay for you to say, yeah, I know, but That's what I'm doing anyway.
right. Exactly. Yeah. And for me, I needed a little bolt of joy in my creativity. And that's what it was for me. At that point, I was not creating for any business reason. There was no book in the offing. There was not even a website to speak of. There was definitely no business plan. And so the art and the story came first. And I find it interesting that that has turned out to be one of my biggest financial successes, artistically speaking, because the initial 6 to 9 months, you would look at this and be like, there is no plan here. There is no groundwork for success. This is just Dave creating and putting a thing up on the website, just higgledy piggledy. But there was energy behind it. There was excitement behind it. There was a lot of passion behind it, but there was no plan there because I just wanted to tell the story. And it's interesting to me that that has translated into the largest financial success of my career when that was not the intent. The intent was to draw a story for me with weird conditions that I liked. Like, why is it in this blue gray? Why is it set in a non-Anglo future? Why is the captain a septuagenarian female, which you never see in sci-fi? You know, all the stuff that people were like, well, this is not the way you do it. And I was like, nah, that's the way I want to do it. It all clicked in the offing, which was great.
Would it be safe to say, Dave, that if you were to start it all over from square one, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you'd be different, that you would not only do different, but stuff that you now look at and say, you know what? That was kind of a mistake. You know,
absolutely.
Not the whole thing, but steps here and there.
Oh, absolutely. Let's just be honest. As business, let's take off our business, our artist hats, and put on our business hats. As a business person, it was a terrible way to start a comic. Right?
Yeah.
Didn't have a website, didn't even have a URL, didn't have a title for the comic that people could refer to in those 6 to 9 growing months. Right? Didn't have a long-term business plan, didn't know how I was going to collect it into books. It was a weird shape. It was not the traditional comic book shape, nor was it the traditional comic strip shape. It was, if you've seen the ratio, Brad, I've sent you the files. They're like 14 by 15. It's a weird shape to publish in. Anyway, all that to be said, yeah, there was a billion mistakes that I made along the way. Absolutely. But I think that's actually instructive as a lesson that all of those mistakes, if there's passion behind the project and you believe in the project, you can overcome each one of those as you go. You know, you'll figure it out if there's genuine love behind the project.
That's what I wanted to bring out, because we talk to and hear from a lot of people who are just starting out their comic and they're so scared. Right. I want to make sure I do everything just right. And how should I do this? And how should I do that? And to a certain extent, I get it. It's like, yeah, I was in that same place where I want to make sure that I'm getting this thing started just right. And I've got a lot of questions. But at some point, you've got to just jump into the deep end and take the plunge, to mix my metaphors, and get in there and start doing comics. There's not a single mistake that you could make. And I'm trying to think if that's actually true, but I can't think of a mistake that would be a game stopper. Anything that you do that isn't quite right, you can always compensate for later and adjust. You know, don't let this stop you from creating. Get in there. Here's Dave, somebody that's been doing comics for years, made a bunch of mistakes. Didn't stop him. A bunch of stuff that maybe he said I would have done differently. Doesn't matter. He compensated, right? Yeah. It's all a part of this thing.
It's one trip in a marathon run that will amount to a blip on the screen. You know what I mean? It's not a permanent fall. It's a trip. And it kind of is an extension of what we said before, Brad, is that if you're creating with genuine joy and you are proud of the work you're producing, you'll figure out a way around the mistakes that you've made, you know, because there's like the opposite is true. And this is actually worth mentioning, Brad. I have had projects, and I won't say which ones, that I have planned out to a T. Every business line item was taken care of. Every T was crossed. Every I was dotted. But there wasn't maybe as much passion behind it, or joy behind it, or personal enthusiasm behind it. And it is interesting that those are the projects that didn't do as well, because people can tell. You know, they're like, oh, this just doesn't have the oomph that other one does. I'm really enjoying that story.
Yeah.
And so for me, Drive has been one of the great loves of my life. I'm so happy with that. When it's all said and done, the story is going to be about 1,000 pages. And then all the guest stories are going to be about 500 pages. And it's going to be collected into a box set with probably the five acts and then a sixth book for all the guest stories. And I think when it's all said and done, it's going to be one of the things that I'm most proud of in my life that I did. And it all started because I just wanted to tell the story. I didn't have a business plan. I didn't have it all worked out. I figured it out as I went. But it's not like I went in blindly. I was actively paying attention to what Chris Straub was doing with Starslip and what Howard Taylor was doing with Schlock Mercenary. It's not like I was an idiot. I was paying attention. I just hadn't applied it to my comic yet, but I was keeping my head on a swivel as to what they were doing. But anyway, the point being that I went in with love for it, you know, and I think that paid off in the long run.
There's one more thing. There's two more things I want to just button this up with. Number one, in terms of making mistakes, I relaunched Evil Inc. in 2016. It had been a comic strip. I kind of relaunched it, restarted the storylines, restarted the character arcs. Even after I restarted it consciously and said, I know what I did in the comic strip. I made a bunch of mistakes in those storylines. Right. I'm going to and made a conscious effort to restart it. Even then, I got about a year and a half in and I said, I did that all wrong. and mentally relaunched it a second time, but never told anybody, but just changed kind of some ways that I was approaching storytelling. Yeah. And I did another silent relaunch where I just adjusted a few things that I was like, yeah, you screwed that. Reading the first book, I was like, yeah, you screwed that all up. But the second thing that is fascinating to me, and I don't know whether we've ever like connected the dots on this, you and I both had major, major creative breakthroughs at public appearances where nobody showed up.
Yeah.
For you, it was the comic appearance. For me, it was Toronto Comic Con when nobody showed up for Greystone Inn, and I sat there saying, "This is terrible. I've got to do something different." And on the plane ride home, wrote Evil Inc.
Well, okay, this is super unplanned, but let's take a second to explore this because this is an interesting idea from a psychology standpoint. Do you think that is life saying to us in that specific moment, well, look, it can't get any worse than this. physically sitting in a space that no one cares about your art.
Yes.
Maybe this is the time to roll the dice, right? Maybe that's that was for us in that moment. Is like, look, you can't go further down, so you might as well try to climb out of here with something different, you know?
It was a real world, it was the real world saying, this isn't working. And you couldn't deny it. You couldn't say, well, it's the algorithm. There were no algorithms back then. You couldn't say that I just didn't use the right hashtag. You couldn't say that, you know, you couldn't use any excuses when you're standing there and people literally look at what you're doing and say, no,
thanks, Tom Hanks.
Very much.
Exactly.
I'm going over there. You can't, there's no excuses anymore. There's no excuses anymore. And that's when it really sunk in. Yeah, this, you know what? This isn't working. I'm going to do something different.
Let me take it from a slightly different angle. It's not only that people are looking at this thing and saying, no thanks, not interested, right? But here's what it is. It also is, remember when you're learning how to ride a bike and you have the first fall where you skin your knee or you hit your knuckles when you're riding a bike and you go, ah, damn. But then you also see in that moment that failure is not permanent. Failure is not the worst thing in the world. Failure is not the worst thing that could happen to you. And I remember in that signing with those five other cartoonists laughing in what was a moment of failure, right? Like there was joy even in that moment. So the idea for me then of having a cartoon or comic that I was going to create that was for me breaking a lot of rules, but I wanted to tell it because I wanted to tell it. The fear of failure was removed because failure wasn't that bad. I was laughing. It was okay. You know what I mean? Well, if this was the worst that it was going to get, that's not that bad. So go ahead and have fun and create.
And you had a cushioned failure because you had people around you. It's hard to feel like a failure when you're right in the same boat as two creative powerhouses like Chris and Kazu. You know, it's like, and was there another person? Am I leaving somebody?
Jorge Cham, who currently has a show on PBS. Jesus. So he's doing great too.
Another creative powerhouse. Yeah. It's hard to feel bad when you're in the same boat as three other amazing creators. I was alone. All alone. You know what I would have given for a Jorge to be sitting next to me? I was alone in Toronto. Had it easy.
Oh my God. Let's cut to Brad 2 hours after that Comic-Con ends, having a little whiskey sour by himself at the bar.
Yeah, it was a quiet ride home, let me tell you that. But I got some good work done.
I just know whenever I went to a Comic-Con with you, if it was a great show and you sold gangbusters, it was a celebratory one whiskey sour at the end of the show. If it was really bad, it was the saddest whiskey sour at the end of the show. But anyway, all this to say is that, to Brad's point about mistakes that you make along the way, is that if there's love behind it and you're keeping your head on a swivel and you're trying your best as you go, no mistake that you can make in cartooning is going to permanently ruin things. It's constant reinvention, constant course correction. I am making mistakes this week, today, I'm sure that I'm going to have to course correct 3 months from now in the storytelling of Drive.
Absolutely.
But even if looked at it from the writing standpoint, it's a corner that I've accidentally written myself into, and I'll write myself intentionally out of it, but that makes it fun.
Yep.
So, for me, Drive has a lot of lessons in how I then went on to do things like Anatomy of Animals, Anatomy of Authors, which...
Yeah.
Yeah. It gave me permission to just say, I want to do something new. I want to do something for me. There's no guidepost on how to do this, but it ended up coming up great. And then one of those books ended up getting Eisner nominated. So Drive gave me permission basically to roll the dice more and to do things just for me again, as we would have done in our teens and early 20s, you know? And it's a good lesson to constantly be relearning in our careers. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. So, Brad, before we jump into the next topic, I think every ear is burning listening to this podcast, wanting to know the deck update. How are things going? Just give us the quick 2-second version of I'm assuming that you're enjoying your deck in summer. You're having a nice Corona with a slice of lime. The shorts are on. The flip-flops are on. You're on the back deck.
Yeah. Listen, the back deck is up. They've got a little bit of work to finish on it. They pulled some siding off the house. They've got to reattach, and they've got to do the electric. But I do have to say, it's amazing. Now, I live in a row house in Philadelphia, and we've got now a covered front porch and a back deck. And the amazing thing is you can walk out on the front porch, and it's super hot, and then walk out on the back deck, and it's about 10 degrees cooler. There's actually, you get more of a breeze in the back alley.
Right.
And so we're like, do you want to go out on the front porch or the back deck?
How bougie.
And then they're like, sometimes we're front porch people. Yeah. Sometimes we're back deck people. And we've been eating dinners on the back deck. So it is very, very nice. It's been 3 weeks. They just got to come up and finish. I just want them to finish.
Contractors are the kings of not starting and not finishing. That is the.
Yeah. We're like in limbo.
But I'm so glad that you at this late stage in life that you have figured out how shade works. I think that's great that you now know that you can either go to the front of the house or the back of the house. And Brad, just as a pro tip, I want to tell you, if it's a really hot day, you know you can stand under a tree. That's also an option. Just so you know that's an option. The sun can't hit you if there's something above you, just so you know. That's how that works.
I know you're being a jerk, but listen to this. If I were to tell you which had more tree cover, which would you guess it was?
The front. I've seen the front of your house.
The front porch. The streets are tree lined. Yeah. So the front porch actually has more tree cover. The back deck is no cover, but it's actually cooler. Well, because of where the position of the sun is too. But we get this cool breeze back there. It's amazing.
Oh, well, you know what that is, Brad? So another fun fact, the earth is slightly tilted on its axis. And so what happens there, Brad, just as a quick survey of how things are going to work, you're going to notice that you're going to be a little colder in winter, a little hotter in summer, okay? Now, that's just because of the tilt of the earth's axis. But also, the sun's going to hit your house from an angle, not from like straight down, but an angle. And so one side of the house is going to get a little bit more sun, even with the trees, and then the other side, a little less sun. So that's just a quick survey of how solar radiation works. All right, so jumping us in to our first topic. So, Brad, I got a question that came in from Dorian Gray over at patreon.com/comiclab. And just a reminder to everyone that if you join us over at patreon.com/comiclab at the $10 level, you could be enjoying us right now live watching visually on the live stream at Comic Lab Live Gab, and that's for everyone at the $10 level. And I gotta tell you, it's been super fun to do. It makes Brad and I, frankly, more performative as we're kind of putting on a show. I'm delighting in it. So do join us over at patreon.com/comiclab at the $10 level. And Dorian writes in, "Hey, Brad and Dave, back in the ad days, an archive could earn you money via eyeballs. Now they earn you money by helping convert new fans to raving fans. What's the business strategy for when a cartoonist should begin moving their archives behind a paywall? Is it after a reboot, thinking of the old Evil Inc. when Brad was dating Lightning Lady, or when you're no longer satisfied with the quality, so anything over 3 months old, or is it never? The fan to raving fan conversion is valuable. Thanks, guys. Your podcast is a weekly joy." Thank you, Dorian. And Dorian, thank you for the pro tips that you sent in about shade. We're going to pass those along to Brad about how he can also, in rain, an umbrella is an option. Just wanted to let Brad know about that. That was also, I don't know where I'm going with this joke. All right.
This is the only comics podcast that when we talk about shading, we're actually talking about umbrellas.
Okay, so let's tackle Dorian's question, because Brad has moved some of his archives behind a Patreon paywall and has moved some of his exclusives and extras and all sorts of stuff behind a Patreon paywall. I have not. So I would actually much prefer to hear from Brad first on this one. Brad, talk about your thoughts on moving anything or everything behind a paywall.
Well, Dorian gave us like three options there, right? He said, do you do it when you do a reboot? Do you do it when you're no longer satisfied with the quality? And then the third option was never, which that's the only one that I don't accept. I think all of those are perfectly good options. All I really want you to think about is that you should absolutely be thinking, especially once you've been doing this for a few years and you've got a sizable archive. What it was for me, it wasn't like whether I did a reboot or any of those other things. For me, it was when I had enough stuff that I could put everything from the beginning up until that point behind a paywall. Right. And there was still a good entry point for new readers to read for free, right off of the public facing website without a subscription. There was a good entry point. There was multiple entry points, and there was enough content there that I could conceivably argue that I could convert a brand new reader and make them into a fan. Right. Once I had enough public-facing stuff that I could see being usable towards fan conversion, everything before that point became paywalled. And for me right now, that point is 2016 when I did the reboot. Remember I talked about earlier in the show when I talked about kind of a silent reboot, when I put some time into doing an overhaul of the site again, it'll probably go from 2016 up until that silent reboot. And there'll be even more stuff behind the paywall. But I absolutely think that you should be using your paywall, you can use Patreon's plugin on a WordPress install to do this fairly easily. And if it's beyond you, like it was me, hire somebody to do it and they can set it up for you very quickly. I think you absolutely should be using your archive as a driver to one of your low-level Patreon reward tiers. So you can, like Dorian rightly points out in his preamble, so you can use those archives to earn you money again. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I'm glad that Dorian asked this question because yeah. I am particularly struggling with this topic myself right now. And Brad will be one of the people that I will lean on in the next 6 to 18 months. When I get done with this Kickstarter and book production, which will roughly take the next 4 to 6 months in terms mm-hmm. of getting the fulfilled Kickstarter into people's hands, my next sort of big task with Drive will be to redo the site, which it is woefully in need of, both in terms of making sort of searchability better, remembering and somehow pinpointing where you are in the archives of the story so that you can jump yeah. back to that. And then also, to Brad's point, having some things behind a paywall. And I personally really struggle with Dorian's idea, which I agree with, that there is incredible value in converting a fan, a new person, however you want to describe them, into a raving fan, a person that buys the books, that jumps in on Patreon, right? And so it's a hard dance for me. It's a hard dance of like where to draw that line so that you can allow them, you basically give them enough rope to not to hang themselves. That sounds terrible. You give them enough rope so that they can pull themselves into the story. You know what I mean? Like if you yeah. give too little, you're like it's just enough of an amuse-bouche that doesn't get you into the dish. Boy, I did not mm-hmm. think I was going to say an amuse-bouche today. You know what my favorite thing to say with my wife is? I had a whole phrase a couple weeks ago with a couscous of amuse-bouche of I don't remember what it was. anyway, okay, so. I, Brad, think that mm-hmm. my archives, you cannot start Drive mid-story, right?
Yeah.
You have to start from the beginning. I don't know how to put that behind a paywall. What I could do is I have paid for and commissioned many Drive guest stories over the years. They are not critical to the main story, but they have some of the biggest artists going creating them. I could mm-hmm. move those behind the paywall, maybe. Right. I could move... one thing that I have found to be an incredibly effective community building tool, I could move comments behind the paywall. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is a lot of times those comments help fire people up for, boy, I guess I really am enjoying this story. You know, there's yeah. a lot of there. And so I struggle with that. But do you see where my struggle is on this, Brad? Or is it am I sounding like a nervous Nelly on how limiting I am with moving behind the paywall?
No, these are perfectly good concerns. Let me make a pitch to you. Okay. What if you took all of book one and put it behind a paywall and replaced it with a synopsis of what happens in book one, the kind of things that we would put on an about page, or we would encourage other artists to put on an about page. You take the entire book one and you put it, you replace it with a synopsis. And then if you want to read the actual pages, you can access that through the paywall, but it's also not stopping someone from getting that information and then starting book two, understanding the key story points.
Okay, but that, I just feel like that's shitty. That's just shitty because, like, how do you jump into Empire Strikes Back if I go, okay, here's a synopsis of what you need. Whiny little shit blew up a laser-firing planet. Okay, now we're into Empire Strikes Back. Now, here's the actual pages of Empire Strikes Back you can read. Like, you get what I'm saying. Like, that's not enticing. That's not fun. That's not what people... You want to wet their whistle with the actual story. You can't start a story mid-story with a synopsis of what's gone before. That's terrible. That doesn't work.
I'm struggling here because on one side I hear what you're saying and I respect it. On the other side, you're telling me that you've never ever watched a movie that was a sequel without watching the first one?
Rarely, very rarely, very rarely. I can't even think of a movie that pops into my mind where I watched the sequel before I watched
That's
the first
interesting.
One.
Interesting. I guess I've got less of a problem with that. It's like, okay, just let me know what I need to know to understand the story, and then we'll start going off on this story.
I the only time I allow that to happen is if I've plopped down on the couch next to my wife and she's watching, I don't know, a show that I don't care about, and I'll be like, yeah. just give me the main. If I'm going to sit here with you, I want to know the main Like, what? Who are the main characters on this show, Gossip Girl or something? Like, who's smooching who? All right, okay, so we're in that guy's the bad guy. All right, I got it. Now I can watch.
Yeah.
I'll do that, but only when I'm emotionally not really into the story anyway. I'm just there for the company. You know what I mean?
Like, well, how many times have you started a story not being emotionally involved, got emotionally involved, and then went back to watch the beginning because now you want to really experience all of this?
Really rarely. Again, maybe this is super subjective. Oh, well,
then you and I are different. I've actually had the experience where I jumped in the middle. Somebody did exactly what you were talking about, sat there on the couch and said, okay, here's what you need to know. In fact, that's how I got into Breaking Bad. I was staying over at Scott Kurtz's brother's house and got, because of a hurricane, ended up being a house guest for about I forget whether it was like an entire week, but I ended up being an extended house guest. And they all had to go to work and stuff. So they said, oh, here's this show. It's called Breaking Bad. I think I started, like season 3 or something. They said, hey, here's what you need to know, blah, blah, blah. Check it out. And I started watching it and watched like all of season 3, got really hooked. By the time I went home, I went back and started with episode 1, season 1, and watched all the way through.
Yeah, so maybe this is just a subjective difference between you and I that I genuinely can't think of either a written story or a film story, either a TV show or a streaming show or a movie series, that I've jumped in midway and been like, I love it. Let's go back to the beginning. I think I'm sort of a completionist, which I guess is the best way of saying it, where I'm like, nope, I got to watch the first one if I'm going to watch the third one, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, so all that being said, that's very mirror marketing, though. But I think
I was just going to say that. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that still proves a point, though, which is I personally feel like it's hard to get a percentage of people to dive in big on a story midway through if they have no emotional hook from the first 100, 200, 300 pages, you know? Uh-huh. I feel like the arc, it's hard. I mean, I guess one way to differentiate it is for your Evil Inc. stories, they are compartmentalized in such a way that if I jumped into Evil Inc. right now, never having read it, I could be up to speed within 30, 40, 60 pages pretty well.
Easily.
Right?
Easily.
But for Drive, it is one long continuous story that's now, I don't know, 500, 600 pages. It's really hard to go, all right, here's what these 10 species are doing. Here's the 4 different empires that are fighting. Here's the technology involved. Like, there's a lot of summary to go on to get you hooked, you know? And a lot of that was told in a fun way, whereas my summary, if I wrote it out, would be like a broccoli serving. It would be like, here's the thing you got to read to get into it. Aren't you excited to read these paragraphs? It wouldn't be sexy or fun or delightful or any of that, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it. But so as Drive gets longer and longer, it gets harder and harder.
Agreed. 100% agreed. 100% agreed. I know that that is a problem too, because I know that Girl Genius had that problem. I know that Schlock Mercenary had that problem. Any long running continuous story is going to come up with that problem. And I feel that happening where people are like, oh yeah, a lot of people say Drive is good. Oh, 500 pages, you say. Oh, all right. Well, I'll see you when the story's done. I do get a lot of that. Go ahead.
If you gave that synopsis approach a chance, wouldn't you be kickstarting that process for a whole bunch of people who might want to get into it today?
Okay. Yes, but I feel like I could do that while still maintaining the archives publicly and just have a synopsis for the people that want to jump in right now, you know?
You could. It is, I'm saying the two could also work in conjunction with each other.
Agreed. No, not agreed. I still have a lot of problems with putting an archive behind a paywall if it's a story. Sheldon, I feel like I could put the first decade or 15 or even 20 years behind the archive. Yeah. And no one needs to know what that is. If anything, the first 5 to 10 years of that comic are very different from what it is now anyway. So it's like there's no real love lost there. But if you're loving what I'm cartooning today, you're probably going to love the Sheldons that I did 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So I can actually see putting that behind the paywall. But I personally feel like Drive is a harder thing to throw behind a paywall and expect people to fall in love with it, which is ultimately what I'm trying to get them to do, you know?
Yeah.
I still think there's still incredible value in giving it to for free to 10,000 people so that I hook 1,000 people so that I get 100 people to buy the book or whatever. You know, these are
but you could still do the exact same thing. You still have lots of opportunities to hook those people by keeping books 2 through what you're up to 4 now, right? You're actively working on book 4.
Yes.
So books 2 through 4 and counting, you still have lots of opportunities to do that.
Hold on, I just had an idea and I'm going to stop because I got really excited about this. You might have accidentally triggered this idea and not known it.
Yeah.
What if I did this? What if books 1 and 2 were free to read? Oh, they're great. And then book 3, like a true jerk, is behind a paywall. And then 4 is free again.
Why is that
worse, though, emotionally, than like limiting 1 and 2?
It's leaving a hole in the middle. It's leaving a hole in the middle. So now,
yeah, but I've hooked them. But I've hooked them though with 1 and 2. That's what I'm saying.
No. Oh, I viscerally don't like that
okay,
idea.
Okay. To me, I think you're having the reaction that I'm having to putting 1 and 2 behind the paywall.
No, because you've broken up your continuity. The whole idea is to give them a head start, not to get them started and then take them out and then put them back in. The whole idea is to get them to a head start and then let them run.
Well, is it, or is it kind of like one of those free to play, but you have to pay to get a little something extra as a feature, right? That's a different and valid form of sales that video games.
The freemium idea is perfectly valid.
Like, hey, I've noticed you've enjoyed the first 300 pages. After this, it's going to be pay to enjoy the rest of the story. It's not like I gave them nothing. I gave them 300 pages for free, right?
Yeah, I don't know why I viscerally don't like that idea.
Yeah, you're having the reaction to that the way I have a reaction to putting the first 300 pages behind the paywall, right?
Okay, so you're gonna leave 1 and 2 free, and then you're gonna put 3 behind a paywall.
Right, 3 up until the last 30 to 60 days of comics would be behind the paywall, and so that
You're actually gonna do that.
No, I'm brainstorming with you. This is not me like saying I'm going to do it. God.
You're not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
Here's the thing is I also know me. I'm not going to put any of this behind a paywall. I know me ultimately. What I will do, here's what I think I will do behind the paywall is a bunch of extra features that make that whole site more enjoyable for people that love the story. So it would be a better forum and commentary system. It would be better archiving and searchability. It would be storyline lists that people are aching for, you know, in terms of like, hey, where is this in the story? Right now, you got to hunt through 500 pages. That's no fun. It would be ad-free, obviously. It would be all the, in terms of mobile versus web, you'd have that possibility too. I think I would just want to add features behind the paywall rather than limit how you could potentially fall in love with the comic behind the paywall.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to just end this by saying this. I've actually took this step, right? So I put a bunch of my stuff behind the paywall, started it with the reboot. So I gave people kind of a fresh place to start. And for me, it was a natural place because frankly, all that stuff that is now behind the paywall is just going to confuse you if you're a new reader, because none of it's relevant anymore. Yeah, you know, there's relationships that don't exist anymore. There's characters that have changed.
True.
Reading the stuff that's behind the paywall is just going to confuse a new reader. So in that regard, it kind of works well.
Yeah.
But it does this help? I switched the site over, gosh, more than a year ago, maybe a year or 2 years ago. I've gotten all of 3 emails, 2 of which were the ones that you expect. You know, you lost me. You never had me. I'm never coming back. Boo on you. You know, drop dead. And the third one saying, I see what you're doing here. I get it. I understand why you're doing it and the business necessities of comics. I'm just not going to, it means that I'm not going to read it. And I get it. But I just wanted to, they were like, am I doing this right? Is there something I'm missing? I'm like, no, you're doing it right. You've got to, $2 a month on Patreon solves this problem. They're like, nah, I get it, but it's not for me, which is fair. That's a fair answer.
Fair, yeah.
And by the way, the first thing I do is say, listen, you can also buy the books. You can get the eBooks cheap. Yeah, right. Very, very affordable. You can be a Patreon backer and find out that a lot of these ebooks are already I've given away for free, and the codes are still good. You can still download them for free. You know, there's lots of ways to do this. You don't have to just do it on the website. And if it means that you're not going to read it, I'm okay with that too. That's okay. The one thing I don't want to encourage people to get into is this idea that there's only so many readers, and if you lose this one, then your chance of success goes down by one. If there's one thing I'm going to try to get through to people listening, is that there are infinite readers. And if you lose one, it's not great, but there's an infinite pool for you to fish from. It's going to be okay, you know? Right. But does it help to know that I did that for 2 years and really only got 3 emails, 2 of which were angry and 1 of which was, yeah, I get it, but it isn't for me?
It does. But I could very easily make the counter argument of, we will never know how much bigger Evil Inc's overall audience and therefore the patronage could be if the archives were fully free. Now, I know that that's a false argument. Yeah. It's a kind of a straw man argument, but that's where my mind goes. So here's where I want a focus that I would like to put on for a second. So all of us in this oversaturated media world where there's literally billion-dollar companies fighting it out in streaming to create content for us, right? And there is an infinite number of cartoonists around the world creating comics that are free. All of us have things that we like, but we don't love. And if any one of them went away, it would not be a tremendous pain for us because we only liked them. And there's a million other options on the table, right? My desire is to move as many people from liking Drive to loving Drive as possible. And I don't know how that's possible when it's behind a paywall. Right. Yeah, I want to get them to love so that they buy this $50-$55 hardcover book from me. Right. And eventually all 3 of them. So the way I do that is I give it to them for free so that they get hooked and they're in the Patreon and then they're in the Kickstarter with the books and all sorts of things like that. And I feel like if I too easily cut off when they're in the like stage, I never get them back because they're like, nah, I got a million other options in streaming, in comics and novels that are, you know, virtually free to read or watch.
If they're blanching at $2 a month on Patreon, what makes you think they're going to spend what it's going to be to get that 5 book box set?
I'll tell you, because there's the old syndicate model is what tells me that can change. There are many comics. For me, it was like, for better or for worse. When I first read that comic, I was like, God, this is not for me. I do not enjoy this comic. But it was in front of me every day. And over the course of 5 or 10 years, I came to love For Better or For Worse, right? And so I'm going to cut you off because I'm fired up. A version of that is what happens with web comics, which is if people are liking the comic, they just keep reading because it's free. They like it. They just keep reading. It's free. Yes. They like it. They're going to keep reading. And eventually what happens is over 5 or 10 years, that like becomes a love. And then you've hooked them as a lifetime reader and a patronage supporter and a Kickstarter backer and all that sort of stuff. And so for me, the syndicate model, the one thing that I want to keep is that ability to give it to them on a regular basis so that I can move them from like to love. Now you go. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, I was just going to point out that the part of that that was missing was that newspaper was force fed to them.
Sure.
They subscribed to the newspaper. It was in front of them, whether they wanted it or not. But okay. So let me, this is the last part of this that fascinates me. You would put the Sheldon archives or a chunk of them behind a paywall.
Yes. Because, and I think I'm realizing this is a key difference between you and I with Evil Inc and Drive.
Yeah.
Because for you, the archives of Evil Inc are actually, if you're being honest to yourself, are actually a detriment to the current possibility of moving someone from like to love, right?
Yep.
The archives actually make it a tiny bit more confusing and harder to move from like to love.
It's way more confusing,
which is the opposite of how I feel with Drive, which is I'm like, you need to read the first 300 pages so that the next 300 pages make sense, right? That's kind of the, if we're being honest with each other, that's the opposite of how we're approaching this. And so for me, Sheldon, there's now 20 years of Sheldon. There's 4,000 Sheldons in the archives. If I'm being honest about it, the best ones are the most recent 500 or the most recent 1,000. So to me, it's okay if the first 2,000, 3,000 go in the archives, because if anything, like you with Evil Inc, it's actually a detriment to moving you from like to love if you're stuck in the Sheldon archives. So I'm okay putting those behind the paywall, right?
I think at the end of the day, you and I kind of agree, because if I thought for a minute that putting the first, let's say, the first two chapters of the new Evil Inc. post-reboot, right?
Right.
If I thought for a minute putting those first two chapters behind a paywall would be a detriment to new readers, I wouldn't do it, right? Because right. the way I've written it, or and the way Evil Inc. Reads as a story, there's entry points along the way, and there's nothing that's so complicated that you couldn't figure it out as the story goes on. But if I had a story like Drive, where you had to have that first book, I think, being honest with you, I'd probably have a different opinion. I think at the end of the day, you and I agree about this.
I think we do, yeah.
I think if I was marketing Drive, I would agree with you 100%.
I think let's get down to let's expand on an idea of what we agree on. We both agree that a paywall is worthy, and a paywall yes. is something to be shooting for. Even with Drive, I think a paywall, a Patreon structured paywall around a WordPress build for the new Drive site, is a worthy thing to do. For me, yeah. I think I'm going to make it feature focused, whereas for you, you're going to make that paywall more archive focused. Yep. I think both of us see there is value basically in saying, hey, there is more quote unquote stuff behind the paywall, more value, yeah. more story, more comics, more features, whatever it might be. And so mm-hmm. I think that might be helpful to Dorian's question, even though you and I disagree on where we are in terms of handling the Patreon paywall.
Yeah. Well, no, the more we talk, though, I kind of agree. I think the more we got down to it, I think it would be a mistake for you to put book one behind a paywall.
You know what's funny is
you brought me around.
Today was the first time I ever cut you off, and I wouldn't let you talk. I'm like, no, I'm going to finish my statement. It's
I know.
Interesting. I never do that.
I'm just waiting for Gloria to get back. That's all I'm saying.
Brad, I'm antsy. I'm fired from the waist here. I'm like, oh, God. You're going to listen to me.
Well, then if it's going to be like that, it's time to end the show. In all seriousness, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my delightful friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good close friend David Kellett, co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com. You can go back and read it from the very first page.
I see you. And a huge shout out to our sponsors for this week, Wacom and the new Wacom One at WACOM.com. Brad and I are longtime users of Wacom, and so we can hardly endorse the whole line. It has impacted our career tremendously, but we thank them for the sponsorship of this show, and we look forward to seeing them next week. And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And I will mention that I think we're, if I've timed this right, we're coming up on the end of the Drive Kickstarter. So if you've liked what you've heard in terms of my passion for the story, my pride, quote unquote, in how much I'm enjoying it, and the joy that it's brought me and others, I invite you to jump over to newdrivebook.com and get yourself Acts 1, Acts 2, or Acts 1, 2, 3. They're all beautiful hardcovers, and you are going to love them. And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice, patreon.com/comiclab.
Gloria, please come home.